Today on Voice of the Public, Las Cruces Mayor Ken Miyagishima joins us to answer your questions and to talk about, among other things, how federal relief money can help benefit projects in Las Cruces.
The cost of goods has gone up considerably because of, so take for example our recent geo bond, what we're building, whether it's the fire station, whether it's the East Mesa complex, new trails, all those have seen increases in prices. And so we're looking to use this money, some of it, to close that gap.
We'll see what kind of input the city has gotten from citizens on cannabis business regulations. We'll talk about police staffing issues and crime in general, the city's mask and vaccine policy, and concerns about the Delta variant as we move forward. Call with your questions, 575-646-2212. For Voice of the Public, from KRWG Public Media. Good afternoon. It's 1:06 and time for Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media. This is Casey Counts and I am joined today by Las Cruces Mayor Ken Miyagishima. Welcome back to KRWG.
Thank you, Casey. Welcome to you as well, and hi to your listeners.
I believe the last time you were on this program, I was still working from home. It would have been the spring of 2020 when the pandemic had just shut everything down. And I want to ask you, between then and now, how do you feel things are looking for Las Cruces in particular?
Well, a lot better because of the fact that we have the vaccine. And there's several, over 65% fully vaccinated. If we can get the remaining 35%, that'd be great. Maybe a little unrealistic, but if we can cut into that to get to about a 75% total rate, I think we'd be well on our way.
Obviously, the news is changing on an almost daily basis as we learn more about the Delta variant and how contagious it is. And mask policies are changing on the campus of NMSU. We'll all be wearing masks indoors once again starting Monday. And at City Council, you had a specific mask or vaccine policy. Tell me what the city policy is currently on masks and vaccines.
Sure. So if you're going to attend a city council meeting in council chambers, you need to either show that you've been vaccinated or wear a mask. So either or.
Do you foresee anything changing in the near future regarding the new guidelines from the CDC and the state in terms of requiring employees to be vaccinated? Any further policy from the city that you can foresee?
You know, there's an ordinance that kind of prohibits us from interfering with the operations of the city manager. So that's going to be his call to whether or not they're going to require that.
So any more emergency proclamations from your office?
Not that I see on the horizon.
All right.
Right now, you know, and for those that are out there wondering, it's a little bit different situation. You know, before there was no vaccine. Now there's a vaccine. Those who aren't vaccinated, they choose not to become vaccinated. And granted, and I'm sure you've heard this as well, that even though you could be fully vaccinated, it's possible to still be able to give that virus.
And so, that's another one of those recent pieces of information that, in fact, the viral load that a vaccinated person can carry with the Delta variant can be just as great as someone who is not vaccinated. So another reminder that those masks are going to be so important moving forward.
Absolutely. I have someone in my sister who lives in Las Vegas. She wants to come down and visit my mom, who's 91, but she's not vaccinated. So the brothers all had a vote and said, sorry, Carol, we have to either, you know, that or, you know, we don't want to take the chance. My mom's 91. And why take that chance? Just get vaccination.
I think this is one way that families have encouraged or maybe strong-armed their some of their loved ones into actually going and getting the vaccine, is to be able to get to see their grandchildren and to gather together with family. Before any more time goes by, 575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call if you have a question today on Voice of the Public for Las Cruces Mayor Ken Miyagi-Shima, talking about a variety of issues facing the city right now. There's a lot going on, Mayor, and so let's just begin with some of the most recent happenings, including the survey and the public meeting about the regulations that we might see within the city limits when adult use cannabis sales begin in April. What's it looking like? What are you hearing?
Well, we haven't set those out yet. We will be. The state allows us to provide some type of zoning. And so naturally, I think from some of the businesses that I've heard so far is they would prefer that it not be allowed in the downtown area and that it be kind of placed in another area of town, similar to other business establishments that are, they're kind of regulated to a particular part of town. So
are you suggesting that all of those businesses might be concentrated into one area of town?
Well, that's what the few requests that I've received, whether that's realistic, I don't know. I do know this, that some businesses, if you were to go back a couple years ago, that had medical cannabis there, especially in the summertime, I guess the smell would resonate throughout the offices in the vicinity, and it was bothering the customers of other businesses. So I think that's probably why they would like it to be kind of regulated to a particular part of the city.
That's interesting. I'm sure the folks over on Motel by the water treatment plant could relate, right?
Hey, you know what? That's probably not a bad location to put it.
It's no secret that you have been hesitant on the issue of cannabis legalization. What have your concerns been?
Sure. So, I've done a lot of studies on it, and I believe that besides it being not healthy for you, it's also has caused bouts of schizophrenia in young adults. The brain doesn't fully develop until age 25. And it's interesting, there was a lady that came to see me on a completely different subject. Mm-hmm. And somehow in the course of the conversation, she mentioned about her son being schizophrenic. And I just said, ma'am, can I interrupt you just for a second? She goes, yeah, sure. I said, did he smoke a lot of dope, marijuana? And she says, well, yes, he did. And I go, okay. I just anytime I hear that, I just have to ask. And so, it's just, I guess, Casey, I guess my concern comes from, right now it's a challenge to help our youth and young adults to, get their education that they need to be able to compete in today's ever-changing, fast-changing world, from electronics to aerospace. And, I would just like for us to help focus on that as opposed to, smoking marijuana. And I've never done it. I don't know, but people say it slows you down. I don't know. It's just, I grew up in a different era. And I remember as a young kid, I wanted to be an FBI agent. And I would look at the application, and at that application, it said, it didn't, and they had to change it now, but it said, have you ever used drugs, ever, in your entire life? I think now it's changed, I understand, to say, in the last 10 years, have you used drugs? They've had to even change, so I understand that. I just had to speak my piece and share with my concerns, and okay, I lost, and we move on. We move forward. I'm not going to be, trying to thwart every effort at every end. I mean, this is a democracy. I got voted. I mean, the legislature mm-hmm. voted. The governor held her special session to pass it. And okay, well, we move forward.
Now, I have some more questions regarding that topic. But first, we have a caller on the line, Robin, who's been holding with a question. Thank you for your patience, Robin, and thank you for calling.
Sure.
Go right ahead.
Okay, first of all, I would have to say I agree with Ken. I'm kind of against all the marijuana stuff. You know, one of the counselors was saying we ought to have tours of marijuana farms, and I'm thinking, what? You know, if we grew tobacco, would we want tours of tobacco farms? But the other question, the main question I had for Mayor Miyagishima is, with the money that we're getting to beautify the downtown area, will there be any money to bulldoze down that eyesore on the corner of Main Street and Loman?
The eyesore of District 4, you must be talking about.
Yeah, the eyesore of District 4. It just distresses me every time I see that half-built monstrosity, and nobody's done anything about it in a decade. So how about using some of the money for that?
You know, Robin, I believe, is that the name, Casey? Yeah. So you wouldn't believe this. Right before, it was probably the early part of 2020 or the latter part of 2019, I met with the owner of that eyesore of District 4, even though I think it's District 1, but that's okay. Yeah, I like the rhyme. And without going into a whole lot of detail, there were plans were set. We were ready to make some movement on it, and then COVID hit. And I have to be candid with you. I have not had a chance to reach out to this gentleman to see, hopefully he's still with us. You know, I don't know. I need to contact someone that knows him. That's how I went through to him. He lives in El Paso. And because it was a subject of a closed session, I can't really disclose too much. But I can tell you this, we haven't forgotten. And we really, if COVID hadn't hit, we probably would have, there would have been, you would have seen some different movement on it by now. So everything.
What was like that thing for?
Well, it was originally built. In fact, would you believe there's quite a bit of infrastructure inside? If you go have it, I'm not going to suggest you go over there because it's, I think it's fenced off, but I went in there and the capacity for electrical is incredible. And so it actually has a roof, a new roof on there. So there is infrastructure in there. There was some things we were going to work with. There's a lot of moving parts right now that I unfortunately can't go into detail. But I will tell you that if we're able to do this, you'll see a different purpose of it.
Okay. It used to be my brother's place long, long ago, I think.
Well, that was across the street, I believe. That used to be the county annex, yes, sir. And then so okay. The city actually owns that building that the Amador restaurant is. It's just we lease it. This was a first of our public-private partnerships that we acquired that building, knocked it down, and rented leased it back to the proprietor. And you know, he's done a pretty good job, I think.
Are you able to say, Mayor, what in those discussions that you had then before the pandemic, what were the plans for it, and what did you expect to see happen had it not been for the pandemic?
Yeah, I can't tell you.
Okay, fair enough.
But it would complement the downtown area. I will tell you this.
Well, I thought if I opened a business there, no matter what, it would be called Eyesore of District 4. But
yeah, I mean it's such a prime location, and everybody passes by it. So it'll just Indeed. Be nice if something nice were there.
All right. Well, let's hope. Thank you, Robin, for your call.
All right. You're very welcome, Casey.
Okay. And you launched us into a topic that we certainly wanted to get to and dive into today. and that is the TID tax increment development districts that that the city is working on, and the recent money that I see $1.8 million for the Amador Hotel. Tell us about the progress that will come with that.
Well, you know, the Amador Hotel is a very historic hotel, and it was given to us by the county. City reluctantly took it. We had a group of well-intentioned residents who wanted to save the hotel and restore it to its pre-1900, you know, style. My concern is, and I haven't seen it yet because, you know, it was, I was out of town. It was my my wife and I, our anniversary, so I was out of town for the first time in, 16 months. Interesting, you know, getting out of town. And so one of the things I was telling residents is I would like for us to have a financial roadmap, if you will, as to how much we're going to spend on this in its totality. Because this building required quite a bit of work because it's an old building. I mean, it was built, I think, in the 1800s. And so if we can get it completed, that would be great. But we need to know just how much are we going to spend totally in this? How much are they going to raise? How much do they think they're going to get from the legislature? So if it's a partnership that way, that would be great. But I haven't seen it yet, Casey. So I know the council had approved the $1.8 million to spend on the Amador. And that there was even discussion that it was going to need even more than that. It's a lot of money.
What could $1.8 million do?
I haven't seen that plan, but I believe it's to shore up the foundation for one thing, because I know when I was a county commissioner, I actually had an office in there. I don't know if you recall, there was an appeals judge named Rudy Apodaca. He had an office in there. And I would vacate my office because the county was running out of space. And, you know, I had my personal office, which I'm in here today. So I gave it up for the county. But I would think that a majority of it, Casey, is to shore up the foundation, put it back to you know, almost like kind, so that it would continue to be on the registry of historic places. There's a lot of fascinating things that they have discovered so far. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's great for history. It's amazing the things that they have found so far. But it's a balancing act. You know, how much do we have here to spend? We also have, you know, roads throughout the city that need some construction. We have there are so many needs in so many different directions. And so it's just, like I said, it's a balance there.
In the intro to our program, you mentioned, and we can jump into the topic of the federal relief money that's coming to Las Cruces. You mentioned some of those projects, a pretty good list of them, that now are meeting increased costs associated with all of the issues surrounding economic recovery and supply line issues, et cetera. So how are you looking to use that federal money to get those projects down the road? And what are some of the other important projects that will be new projects from those relief funds?
So the federal government gave us about $24 million. And so the city council has had one work session already, and we're going to have another one on August 9th. So the first one that we had, staff gave us a little bit of a head start and had some suggestions. And some of the suggestions were to help shore up the fire station, the walking trails, the East Mesa sports complex that were falling a little short because of increase in costs because of the pandemic. You know, it used to be where gas prices went up because of scarcity. Well, it is scarcity, but it's not scarcity of fuel. It's scarcity of drivers to get the gas to the stations. So anyways, this next, so that was about 12 million dollars that we were looking at. And so our next meeting on the 9th, we're going to also look at the other half of the $24 million, and of that 12 million, about 5 million is going to be used for or proposed. These are just suggestions, because if we didn't have staff doing the groundwork, then council could say, hey, well, what are we going to spend it on? You know what I mean? So it's got to start with some way, and we appreciate what they do. And so that $5 million is really more geared toward community efforts. We have one council member who wants to spend that money to help what they call guaranteed basic income. You know, I applaud her. She's got a heart of gold, but it's only going to benefit about 100 people, 150 people. And what about, 99,900 residents who aren't going to get that money? You know what I mean? So I think there's other ways to spend it, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Well, there are no shortage of ways to spend it. That's for sure. How much of that chunk is proposed for the guaranteed basic income proposal? 5 million?
No, 2 million of the 5 million.
2 million. You know, there have been, it wouldn't be a first of its kind. And there have been some studies to show that it really did help people, get out of the situation that they were in. How could you see the city of Las Cruces giving that help to citizens in a different way?
Mm-hmm. Well, during COVID, we would give money to, say, a community action agency or a few other nonprofits, so that when you had a resident who fell on some hard times and needed a short-term amount of money to get through the predicament that they might be in, they were allowed to have money this way. So I think we could probably use those millions to help people with, if they are struggling with utilities, if they're struggling with rent, if they're struggling with, food insecurity. And so I think we can help probably close to 5 times as many people with the same amount of money. So, again, I understand where the counselor's coming from. And so I had proposed to her that, how about if we focused on maybe single moms with children that are struggling? And she says, well, I don't want to pin it down to just them. And I go, well, then I probably can't support it. But that doesn't mean it's not going to happen. You get 4 council members and it's going to, they move in that direction.
What is the timeline for that decision?
Well, at the work session on August 9th, is going to signal the direction of where the council is going to go. So if at that meeting, 4 council members or more signal that they want to move in that direction, then you're going to see a resolution coming forth to be voted upon, and then the money goes to various organizations.
All right. It is 128-575-646-2212. The telephone number to call if you have a question for Las Cruces Mayor Ken Miyagishima, joining us today for Voice of the Public. And Carrie is on the line. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks so much, Casey. And good afternoon, Mr. Mayor. This is Carrie Bachman.
Oh, hey, Carrie.
Hi there. I appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit about the ARPA funding and the conversation you're having related to the guaranteed basic income and where those funds might be used. And I guess I just would like some clarification and then some sense of how community members can participate best in the process. Are all the funds that that staff suggested being spent, at that earlier June work session meeting, are those going to be all finally determined and voted on August 9th, or is there an opportunity for there to be any other suggestions put forward related to how the city might spend its own portion of the ARPA funding?
That's correct. Correct in that it's you have more opportunities to share with council as other ways to spend the money. It would not be done on August 9th, as that's going to be a work session, and then we don't vote on items during a work session. So if you feel you have another proposal, in fact, I'll ask you right now, go ahead and share it with us and, you know, see
sure.
what you have.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think there are two separate pieces that it's important, and I think it's confusing sometimes. There's the portion that you all, I think it's great that you want to allocate to nonprofits to do work in the community. That portion, you know, an RFP still needs to be developed and everything. But the portion you're talking about for city programming, I guess what I would suggest is that the city take this as an opportunity to really try out a very useful and fruitful method of looking at how those decisions are made, which is called participatory budgeting, and I'm sure you're familiar with that. There are many municipalities around the world who do that, and it's basically a way for a city to say, we're going to have X percentage of this funding stream that community members come together and participate in a facilitated process by which they decide which programs within the city get funded. They're not determining who is getting the grant funding that the city's administering to nonprofits, but it would be, okay, do we want to allocate to these roads or this much to roads and this much to something else? And it's a real opportunity, I think, to develop capacity amongst community members as well as staff to really begin to work more closely together to make decisions that impact the community. Is that something you might be interested in, or has there been any conversation about that?
Oh, no, absolutely. That sounds very similar to Elevate Las Cruces when we brought in members of the community to share with us their vision of what they'd like to see Las Cruces in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years out. This I think, would complement this very much. I would have no problem with that at all. I think that would
be fabulous.
Yeah, interesting to hear because, you know, even though, excuse me, I mean, this is technically, you know, this is taxpayer money, and you all are taxpayers, and, you know, and you elect us to represent you. So, yeah, sure, we want to hear, of course, we want to hear what you have to say and see how
well,
we can.
That sounds wonderful.
That.
And I'm sure there are many other folks who have many good ideas as well. I just think that's a way to engage multiple constituents in a process that often is you know, sort of limited to the bigger players or the folks who are super involved in following politics. And that just increases civic engagement and makes it easier for you all and staff at the city to do their jobs as well. So thank you, Mayor. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I have one, Carrie. In fact, let me bounce an idea off of you, if that's okay. Or I don't want to take over the show here, Casey.
I am, you know, you make my job so easy. Go right ahead.
Okay. So, Carrie, let me tell you one idea that I wanted to propose to my colleagues was, let's just say there was a handful of houses that are currently owned by, you know, investors, whether they live here in town or not, doesn't matter. And let's say we approach those investors and they're willing to sell the house and to the city. And then the city with that money fixes up the house, maybe puts a new roof, maybe does electrical. Because, you know, nowadays people need different electrical needs because everything's electric. And then maybe do some landscaping, maybe do some weatherization, maybe add AC or air conditioner if they don't have it. And then sell it back to the resident at cost. And I can, and then since it's our money that they would have been given, we could do a very low interest loan, like, I don't know, 2%, probably less than a bank. They would make payments to the city, would go into a special fund. They would own the house, whereas the very house that they were renting, now they would be owning it. And I bet you the price would be cheaper. And then from the monies that they pay the city, we do that to other houses. And so we'll just go in perpetuity. What do you think about that?
That sounds like an interesting idea. I mean, I don't know the logistics behind it. It sounds like a way potentially to get around anti-donation.
Federal monies.
It does actually fall in line with something I was at. I provided some input regarding the ARPA grants that are going to be going out, that it'd be really nice to look at some kind of a program where residents themselves could be trained to do some of that weatherization or upgrading of homes in terms of the infrastructure so that it's actually providing jobs to people. So that might be an added wrinkle as well.
Well, it's interesting that you brought up the anti-donation. So because these are federal monies, they're not subject to the anti-donation clause. That's how the one counselor who proposed the guaranteed basic income, that can be done. We couldn't do this with city money. We couldn't do it with state money. But federal money is not subject to the anti-donation clause. And circling back to what you talked about weatherization, there is discussion right now, and I'm going to just share this with you because it's semi-public, because I've made these comments publicly before, is we were looking at using 1% of the franchise fee from El Paso Electric, the additional 1%, to be used to help weatherization for some of our lower income families and households around the city, because that would generate enough that probably would save them maybe $50 a month in their costs for electric costs, and it may only cost you and I maybe 50 cents extra a month. You know what I mean? So that's a nice return, and it would put actual money back into the pockets of our residents who were a little bit lower income.
Well,
and also decrease the amount of environmental impact long term that heating and cooling has.
Right. I forgot the most important thing. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Carrie. I do want to talk a lot more about. Mm-hmm. Good to hear from you. Have a great weekend.
Alrighty. Bye bye now.
Bye. And on the issue of affordable housing, and that sounds like one way that you could help some. Any idea how many properties like that exist in Las Cruces?
A lot. Mm. Probably at least 1,000.
That is a big number. And when we talk about building new affordable housing in Las Cruces, and of course it's not a great time to be trying to build houses anywhere until we see some of the costs start to come down again. But when you talk about building affordable housing units, how do you keep investors from being the ones that actually purchase those units?
Okay, so let me share with you a different concept. I just told you that I just got back from out of town. So I flew Southwest Airlines, right? So when you walk into that airplane, there's going to be a myriad of different people that either paid full price, they got it at a discount, or they got it free because they have points, or they got it free because they have coupons, because you're a frequent flyer and you have a companion pass and you get it free.
Sure.
So when you're walking in that airplane, you don't know who paid what unless they put you in a certain area. Well, they don't do that, right? So when they pass out the snacks or they give out the free drinks, they don't say, hey, who in here got this for free, and you get it last. You don't do that, right? So one of the things, Casey, and this is kind of, hopefully I don't take too much time, but I'll try to cut right to the chase. So let's say we use this money. And remember I talked about that we would be you would make payments to the city. So we have money in the TELSHORE fund that we can lend out. And so let's just say hypothetically, we have an investor who wants to build some really nice apartments, but we either do a public private partnership where we either lease them the land at like nothing, or we lend them money at a very small interest rate in return for them to say out of 50 units, five have to be, or 10, whatever, have to be rented at a certain price, well below market. Okay, and so the reason why I'm using this example is, you know, as a kid growing up here, I knew, you know, and all the other kids knew where the affordable housing was at. You know what I'm trying to say? And by doing it this way, you won't know that. These will be regular, beautiful new apartments, and some will pay full price because they can afford to. Some will pay a lot lesser price because that's what the agreements that we would have made with this developer. Hey, we're giving you this land for like nothing, and we're lending you money for like nothing in return for you charge almost near nothing, so that different families can you know, they're there. It doesn't matter how much you make, you get the same place, just like that airline that I was telling you about, just like when you walk into an airplane. And that's how we can change the focus. So instead of being affordable housing, it's based on wages. You know, you see what I'm saying? It's and you're not gonna, unless you go and tell someone saying, hey, yeah, I only pay $250 for my apartment. You know what I mean? The other person's paying $1,000. Well, you know, I guess we can't tell them not to say it, but you know, I don't know. I'd probably keep quiet.
So what kind of timeline do you envision for that kind of effort to get underway?
You know what? We can do it soon. It all depends. And I may have a little bit more of an advantage over some of my colleagues because, you know, I you may not know this. I know you know me for insurance. But before I was in insurance, I was a college student, but I was going to be a real estate banker in Alaska. I had just graduated, got a job offer in Alaska. I went into the insurance to tell my district manager I was going to be quitting, and he wouldn't, you know, he talked me out of it. And that was 37 years ago. So, you know, I'm familiar with different things, and it's easier, you know, because some of my colleagues, they come from a very important aspect, and they come from more of the behavioral science side, and I came from the business college side. You know what I mean? So it's a little bit different.
And this, just a note that this is not an endorsement of any insurance agency or provider, but a lot of Las Cruces people all over the area have been having a real hard time since since heavy monsoon rains and strong winds and hail have damaged people's homes. And so I thought it would be worthwhile to have you talk a little bit about what homeowners should know about this process moving forward. What advice would you have for people navigating the process or protecting themselves the best that they can?
Sure. Well, hail and wind-driven rain is usually a covered peril. And if they suspect it, they should contact their agent and perhaps file a claim, and or you know, if they suspect damage to their roof or other parts of their home, to, you know, contact their agent and maybe have an adjuster take a look at it.
Sure. Beyond that, it's pretty hard to get a roofer to your house currently. Are there other ways homeowners should be, you know, protecting their properties if they're caught in that in-between phase? Raise my hand. I'm one of those.
Okay. Well, if there's damage to the home, I believe, and again, they need to check with their agent. I believe that it would be acceptable. What I would do is let's say you have a hole in your roof, okay, and you don't want it to cause further damage. I believe it would be acceptable, but again, I have to say, check with your agent to take pictures of it and just say, I'm going to put some temporary boards or whatever it may be the case, just to prevent further damage. And I think the insurance company would like that as well. And so, again, I'm trying to be very, you know, trying to answer your question without going into too much detail, because I'm really not I don't want to.
Correct. And we appreciate that. We do. It's just a frustrating time, I know, for so many who are waiting for those professionals who have a long list of jobs to do. And so it's taking a while.
I will tell you something that's interesting. So let's say, for example, because I've seen many trees knocked down. So let me just share with you what I believe to be the answer on trees. So let's say you have a tree in front of your house, strong, healthy tree, gets blown over and hits your neighbor's car. So typically for insurance to pay, you have to show negligence. Just because it was your tree and blew over, I mean, it was a strong tree. I mean, the wind just took it and blew it over. I really don't see where you were negligent. Now, let's take that same tree. You failed to water it, all right, and you didn't take care of it, and it's a dead tree, but it's still in your yard, right? Now the wind blows it over. You could pretty much blow it over just blowing on it because it's dead, right? And it falls and damages your neighbor's car. Now I think that may be considered negligence. So you see the difference?
Indeed. You got to take care of your property.
Well, that or, yeah, if you have a dead tree in your yard, you need to get rid of it, because if the wind blows it, you're probably going to, you know, you might be liable for whatever damage it takes. Mm. So.
145 and 575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call. If you have a question this afternoon for Las Cruces Mayor Ken Miyagishima, please join the program, Voice of the Public, here at KRWG Public Media. A few weeks ago, Mayor, there was a heinous, shocking crime at Apodaca Park. And we know that, you know, that is just something that's so shocking to us that it's so, that kind of thing's so rare. But I want to talk about crime in general. The thought that something like that could happen at a park where you take your family and hang out is just so, so frightening. And the circumstances in the case, the individual had at one time had murder charges against him dropped, had been arrested for vandalism on some businesses, local businesses. But he's a homeless person, so he didn't really have necessarily anywhere to go when he was released from jail. It seems like a very complicated situation, and that's just with one individual. What are your concerns regarding crime in Las Cruces currently?
Do you recall a few years back, it was a question on the state on the ballot on the election to change the way bonds were done, and many defense lawyers said, hey, this is the better way to do it, instead of having, you know, it was a change in the way bonds were applied if one was to be arrested. It's my understanding, and I want to clarify this, because I think the men and women of law enforcement in our city and county do a fantastic job. So police officers can only detain you for no more than 24 hours. So within those 24 hours, someone from the district attorney's office has to charge you. So you could be arrested, you could be charged, and then you could be placed at the detention center. And the judge, depending on, and especially now with this new law that was passed a few years ago, and you're going to, I predict you're going to see it go back to the way it was before, because too many people are being released on bond. They really have no business being released, okay? You had advocates who were saying, hey, this isn't fair. They did these things here. They should be able to bond out. I remember specifically people used to say, the price of the bond should not coincide with the type of crime. Well, I'm sorry, I don't know about that, but you're seeing more and more people being released that probably shouldn't have been. So I'm not just necessarily blaming it on the judge or whoever set the bond, but that has a lot to do with it, Casey. And then the second thing is, and we're not just alone in increasing crime. I mean, I you may or may not be aware of, I sit on the advisory council of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, which is a national organization of mayors throughout the United States, roughly 500 members. Of course, there's more mayors than that in the United States, but these are actual members. And so we see the information of all of our cities that are members. And so, unfortunately, you're seeing crime rise throughout the United States. And so, in fact, I just read where a young police officer it just slips my mind where he was at. He just got ambushed 2 days ago. He was went home for lunch and was just shot outside his residence. You know, these are terrible things. And this, I've noticed with this pandemic where I was at, usually the place is very friendly. I didn't come across too many friendly people. I think they were just, I don't know. I can't explain it, Casey. This time off that people have had, it changed. Things changed, you know.
Maybe a lot of pent-up frustrations and anger and all kinds of things.
Priorities were changed. How you look at different jobs changed. You know what I mean? So it's just, I think it's going to eventually get back, but it's going to take a little bit of time, you know. And we're fortunate if we're here today talking on your this great show of yours, you know what I mean? And so, but think about all the hundreds of thousands of Americans that lost their lives during this pandemic. I know, you know, I had family members who I lost, and I'm sure you have close friends or maybe family members as well. This is just a very challenging time, and I'm fortunate that we had good, you know, people, and, you know, and say what you will about him, but I relied a lot on Dr. Fauci, you know, I really did. I would read and I would listen to him. But what really changed my mind about wearing mask was Dateline had a show, I think it was Diane Sawyer, and it showed, and they had, it wasn't infrared, because I remember it was green, and they would show how many droplets when a person sneezes. You know, I will never get that out of my mind. Mm-hmm. And then they showed how much it stops with the mask, and it stopped it considerably, not all of it, 90% or so. Then they put another mask on. Oh man, there was like one or two little tiny droplets, and I thought, wow, you know, we're not going to mandate double mask. But
I wore two for a while. Yeah, I did, and I may go back to that personally here pretty soon. But Mayor, before we run out of time, because gosh, we only have a few minutes left, we have some callers on the line holding with questions. So let me first get to Wayne. Good afternoon, Wayne. Thank you for waiting. How are you?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Good. This is Wayne Huber. Good hearing you, Mayor. I've learned so much from you just today. This was very helpful. And I see that Tuesday is National Night Out Day for downtown, which is also good. And we're going to get to meet all our police officers, I guess, at that time, which is wonderful. Looking forward to that. But the thing I called about is I was part of downtown from when we first tried to open it up. And open up Main Street, I was on the board of the Downtown Partnership, and now I'm with the Arts and Cultural District. And one thing that our goal was from day one was to have a plaza. And now we have Plaza de las Cruces, which I love, but there's no sign. And our board has talked a couple times about when is a sign going to be installed on the plaza. I know the city council talked recently about putting some shade shelters there, and they've decided to not go ahead with that for a while, but still it would be nice to have a sign on the plaza. So with all these people coming to Las Cruces now, we need to know where it is.
Right. Thanks.
That is my question.
Thanks, Wayne, for your call. Mayor?
No, that's a great question, Wayne. And I'm embarrassed to say that I never thought about putting a sign there. So I just wrote it down. I'm going to bring it up for discussion. And we need to see about having a sign designating this plaza, you know, de Las Cruces. And on the shade, I have to tell you, I'm a little disappointed. You know, again, I have no one to blame but myself because I was out of town. But it's hot in Las Cruces during the summertime. I often think about, there was a time we had a chance to put the shade on a few years back, but you know, council said, well, we don't want to do half of it, or we can do 3/4 of it. And I, you know, why don't we just buy the whole amount and we can, you know, because they were in parts, they were in pieces. We could, if we bought 4 pieces, that's the full complete. And if they really wanted 3, then just don't put the third one on, but still have it available. If you want half, then just don't put 2 of them on. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, sometimes it sounds so simple, and it really is, but sometimes we make too much to do of it.
we make things harder than they have to be.
Exactly. It needs some covering there, because it's, can you imagine if we had a nice covering and how many more people could enjoy it? And it's hot. I mean, no, and it's not good to be staying out in the sun.
No, sir. No, sir. We know that much. That's for sure. Heat can be very, very dangerous. And let me try to get the last couple of callers in that are waiting here. Bob, good afternoon. Thank you for your patience, and thanks for calling Voice of the Public.
Hi, thanks a lot. This is Bob Libby. I went to a meeting of Las Cruces Utilities the other night in the city council chamber, and I'm wondering what kind of influence or control you have over Las Cruces Utilities, because because of that freeze in Texas, we had to pay a large surcharge on our gas bill. And I asked them, you know, this is probably going to happen again. We're at the mercy of Texas and the their terrible utility control there. And I said, why don't we have storage of 1 or 2 weeks worth of gas, so the next time they had a freeze up there, we don't get overcharged for electricity. So that's my suggestion. So I want to know if you have any control over them or influence. And I think it's a really good idea that we have a gas storage tank here in Las Cruces.
Well, thanks, Bob, for that. So I appoint members to that commission, the Las Cruces Utilities Commission. There are three council members, and then there's three members of the public. Now, the three members of the public, they have to show a certain background. It doesn't have to be all in engineering, but they have to have certain background. And so those, because we believe that those three members of the public will speak for members of the public. They're not elected. They submit resumes, and then I'll choose them, and then the council has to vote on them. As far as what you were talking about, what had happened, and this is why we're still challenging this, is when that freeze hit, the city was going to put an option on to purchase gas, and we really didn't, but they assumed that we were going to, and then they build us for it. So what we're doing is we spread it out over a few years so that it can eventually get paid back. We feel that if we were to be successful, then of course that would be refunded. And so that's on that. As far as the storage of gas, I don't know if we have the capacity to store for 2 weeks that large of gas. I don't know. I that's an interesting concept. Simplistic. But it could be done easily. I know we do that with water. When we had that freeze several years ago, 2012, and we had water still. I remember our friends in El Paso was running out of water, but we still had some in our tanks. But I need to look on that as far as if we could store gas for that long.
Interesting idea. Thank you. And let's see if we have time for one more caller before we run out of time. We've just got a couple of minutes. So, Patty, can we answer your question in a couple of minutes?
Well, I hope I can make a quick comment. Hi, Mayor. I certainly don't expect you to know everything in this town or do everything perfect. You know, we're all human. I actually respect you for a lot of things that you stand up for or against on your own against the council. So that's important. But I have to take issue with the bail reform issue that you were talking about. That really needs to be clearly understood. And you know how easy it is to pass on inaccurate information. And I don't have time to go into it, but it's like we've got some real problems with the DA's office. That's who's responsible for holding a pretrial detention hearing so that the judge will hold them on no bond. And they've basically said, we don't have the resources, you know, we're short-staffed, and so, oh well, we just release everybody.
Okay, let me check into that. And if we need to, if it means the city to be able to contribute to help with, if this would help reduce crime, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I just think it's unacceptable that they say they're short-staffed. I mean, that puts public safety at risk, so it's important. And I'm glad I got a chance to tell you, and I'll probably email you more on the bail reform issue.
Thank you, Patty.
Thank you.
All right. As we wrap up here with Las Cruces Mayor Ken Miyagishima, I wanted to circle back around to one of the topics that we began the hour with, and that is adult use cannabis sales beginning in April. And you indicated that you had never even tried it. So my question is, will you when it becomes legal?
No, I won't try it.
You know, it comes in Rice Krispie treats and gummy bears and...
I'm good. I'm lucky if I'll drink a beer every so often. Not saying that I didn't when I was younger, but you know, beer's fattening, and you know, I'm getting older, and fat just seems to cling to me.
And you don't want to be getting the munchies, though.
Yeah, you know, the reason why, you know, when I was a kid, I'll admit I wanted to be, you know, really high up in office, and I didn't want any scandals. I didn't want to do nothing.
It's incredible that you knew that at such an early age, and congratulations for getting to the point where you are, Mayor Las Cruces Mayor Ken Miyagishima.
I wanted to be the FBI agent and then turned, you know.
Thank you for joining us today, Mayor. We've got to run. I hope you'll come back soon.
Sure. No, this was fun. Thanks.
And Leora Zeitlin is coming up next after NPR News, Intermezzo by Request.